So, if you were to see me about a month ago, this is probably what I would have looked like. For many of you who have been getting our weekly newsletters, you would have seen that Sam and I went on a camping tour. And there were 2 weeks in a row that we went to 2 separate camps, 6 hours away. We weren't really smart there. I had the job of taking 2 weeks' worth of our life into the car. And so this is sort of like what I looked like. And it was heavy, and it was annoying, and I really wanted to get to the car. There's times in our lives, too, that we sort of look like this, isn't it? Maybe not, well, there are times probably when we're going on a camping trip, like Pastor Jesse and his family, where we physically look like this. But emotionally and spiritually, there are times we look like this, where we take on baggage, where we feel the weight of it every day, and it gets tiresome, and it gets annoying, and it gets frustrating. As actually Jesse alluded to with the kids' message, Jesus talks about a time about coming to him with our baggage and leaving it at his baggage claim. So let's look at that passage. In Matthew 11:25-30, it says, "At that time Jesus said, 'I praise you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because you have hidden these things from the wise and learned and revealed them to little children. Yes, Father, for this is what you were pleased to do. All things have been committed to me by my Father. No one knows the Son except the Father, and no one knows the Father except the Son, and those to whom the Son chooses to reveal him. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and am humble in heart. And you will find rest for your souls. My yoke is easy, and my burden is light.'" That kind of last section there in those last 3 verses, 28-30, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." Many of us have probably heard that verse. I know sometimes I get that verse sent to me in one of our prayer team cards. People have sent that message to me when things are tough, when things are hard. It's what I like to call a t-shirt verse or a mug verse. We like to plaster it on t-shirts. We like to plaster it on mugs. But you see, it's at the last bit of an entire chapter. Now, you can't read that, and when Sam was going through my slide, she went, "That's really small, Nate." But there's a purpose to that. It's to show you that those 3 verses come at the end of an entire conversation Jesus is having. That when we stick that verse on a mug, that when we stick it on a t-shirt, that when we send it in a card, that's awesome, don't get me wrong. But there's all this surrounding conversation, this surrounding context to those last 3 verses. So what's going on, and why is it important? Well, in the first 19 verses, 1 to 19, it talks about John's doubts. Now, not John, the disciple who wrote the Gospel of John, but John the Baptist, the cousin of Jesus, the one who, a few chapters beforehand, had baptized Jesus, the one who saw who Jesus was, the Messiah, the Lamb of God, come to save the world from their sins. Now, at this time, John's actually in prison. He's been arrested by King Herod. Why? Because John's been saying some stuff. You see, Herod was a little paranoid. And so what Herod did is he killed his entire family. He even killed some of his sons. And then he married his brother's wife and took on her daughter as his own. And John, who looks at Herod, who claims to be the king of the Jews, goes, "What are you doing, Herod?" And so he calls him out on it. And I don't know about you, but when people call me out on the stuff that I've done, I don't really like it. And Herod didn't either. So he imprisoned John. And so John's sitting there in prison by himself, alone with his thoughts. And he's thinking, Jesus is the Lamb of God. Jesus is the Messiah. Why am I in prison? Why is Herod still in control? Why is Caesar sitting on the throne in Rome? Why hasn't Jesus overthrown Rome and set up the Davidic kingdom? Why hasn't he come? Guns a-blazing. And so what he does is he sends two of his disciples, two of his followers, to go and ask Jesus, was I wrong? Are you just some rabbi? Are you just some prophet to tell us about the Messiah to come? And Jesus looks at John's disciples and says, no, I am the Messiah. I am the Messiah. Then the next few verses, 20 to 24, are the town's doubts. You see, Jesus at this time has been traveling around Galilee through all these little villages and towns, preaching, teaching, and healing. And everybody is going, wow, this guy's special. This guy must be the Messiah. This guy's like no one else. At some verses, it says their jaws were literally dropped at his response to certain questions. And so they're going, this guy must be the one who would come and save us. Save us from our oppressors. Save us from Rome. Set up the Davidic kingdom. Set up the glorious kingdom of Israel once again. But Jesus didn't do that. And so they began to doubt him. And Jesus, in these few verses, if you read them, says, woe to you, to each village. He says, if I had done these miracles in Sodom and the Gomorrah, they would have believed. If I had done these miracles in these other villages, they would have believed. They would have seen that I am the Messiah. You see, Jesus didn't come to do what they thought he was going to do. Instead, Jesus came to set the captives free, like it says in Isaiah 61:1 and Luke 4:18. But set the captives free, not just in a physical way, but even in a more powerful way, a spiritual way, an emotional way. A way that would truly set them free. And then we get to this passage, Matthew 25 to 27. At that time, Jesus said, I praise you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because you have hidden these things from the wise and learned and revealed them to little children. Yes, Father, for this is what you were pleased to do. All things have been committed to me by my Father. No one knows the Son except the Father, and no one knows the Father except the Son and those to whom the Son chooses to reveal. What's Jesus saying here? He's saying, I have come, and the work that I'm doing is the work of the Father, is the work of God. The things that I'm saying is the work of the Father and the work of God. The things that I'm doing is the work of the Father and the work of God. And those who get it, come to me like little children. Then we get to these verses, the mug verses, the t-shirt verses. But they come after this whole conversation that we miss out on. This whole context that gives deeper depth to what Jesus is saying here when he says, come to me, all of you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Do you catch what Jesus said there? Take my yoke upon you. Now, when I heard this verse when I was about Maddie's age, and even up until my preteens, when I heard the word yoke, I thought egg yolk, and I was very confused. Take my egg yolk upon you. Why does Jesus want me to carry an egg? That's not what Jesus is talking about, although that would be great. What Jesus is talking about is this. Right here is a yoke, right there. A yoke would be placed across the shoulders of two cattle or oxen. And it was placed there and tied to usually a plow in the fields. And what would actually happen is a older ox, this guy right here, would be matched up with a younger ox, and the older ox would pull the majority of the weight, and the younger ox would follow and learn from the older ox. And so the weight would be distributed. That's what Jesus is talking about here when he's talking about, take my yoke upon you. Then he says, learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart. Just like a younger ox learns from an older ox, that's what Jesus is talking about. He's inviting those who are listening to come alongside him, to walk beside him, to walk with him, and to learn from his ways, to learn how he walks, to learn how he talks. And what are we to learn? We are to learn gentleness and humbleness, humility in our hearts. It's interesting, Robert Mounce, who's a commentator, says this about Jesus' words here, specifically about humility. In classical literature, in Greek literature, the idea of humility was generally held as a vice, something bad. The Greek taipanos means undistinguished or subservient. Humility was looked down upon. The Christian virtue of humility, though, is an outgrowth of the gospel. Jesus is saying, come and walk with me. Come and let the outgrowth of the gospel permeate your life. Come from your life. Then he says, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. What does he mean by this? The Greek word for easy here is Christos. Everybody say with me, Christos. Christos. What does that mean? Why did I get you to say that lovely word? Because I love Greek. No. So, Christos actually means well-fitting. You see, what Jesus is saying here is my yoke is well-fitting for those who come alongside me. It actually fits us super, super well. When I was talking to Sam about this, she went, Christos, that kind of sounds like crest. Yeah, we're meant to wear a crest that is well-fitting to us. So, if we go back to verses 28 and 30, after all that context, here's a better translation. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls in the outpouring of the gospel. For my yoke fits so easily that my burden is light. Wow, that's powerful, isn't it? Jesus said it in a different way in a couple chapters later in Matthew 16, 24 to 26 like this. Then Jesus told his disciples, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself, give up his yoke, and take up his cross, my yoke, and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? Or what shall a man give in return for his soul? So how do we take on his yoke? How do we take on Christ's yoke? There are multiple rhythms actually in the Christian life where we can come and we can take off our yoke, take off our burdens, take off our baggage, and lay them at Christ's feet. One of those ways is what we actually celebrated last week. Does anybody remember what we did last week? Okay, come on. I want Drew to hear it on the live stream. Okay, we'll work on it. Man, the youth are outshowing all of you. Communion is what we celebrated last week. Communion is a way where we can come to Christ and unload our baggage. When we look at communion, the kind of theological word, and in some faith traditions, it's called not communion, but the Eucharist. And when we look at that, the Greek word for it comes from the Greek word eucharistos. Let's say that together. Eucharistos. Say that 10 times fast. And when we look at that word, what's interesting is embedded in that word is the Greek word charis. Everybody? Charis. This Greek word is the Greek word for grace. And Eucharist actually means thanksgiving. And so communion is thanksgiving for grace. When we come to the table, what we are doing is we are thanking Christ for the grace he gives us, despite our baggage, despite our faults, despite our sin. Here's the thing, though. A lot of times when we come to communion, this verse is in the back of our heads. When I was growing up as a pastor's kid, this verse was quoted at me before we could come to communion. In 1 Corinthians 11, 27 to 29, it says, "So then, whoever eats the bread or drinks the cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner will be guilty of sinning against the body and blood of the Lord. Everyone ought to examine themselves before they eat of the bread and drink from the cup. For those who eat and drink without discerning the body of Christ eat and drink judgment on themselves." This verse is typically quoted in the context of communion, one, because Paul, writing to the church in Corinth, is talking about communion. But we interpret this verse as, if I'm going to take communion, I have to get all my ducks in a row. And so we sit there and we list off the list really quickly of all the things, all the baggage we're coming to church with, all the baggage we're coming to communion with, all the sins and all the things that we know that are not honoring to God. I better get it straight, because if I don't get it straight and I take communion, well, Paul says I'm basically cursed. Right? And so we sit there sweating, going, oh, did I miss anything? Did I miss anything? That's not what actually Paul's talking about here. Similar to Jesus' words about the yoke, these two, three verses, are in a whole conversation that Paul is having with the church in Corinth. If you read 1 Corinthians, you'll discover that the church in Corinth was a pretty messed up church. They got a lot of things wrong. Paul was not very nice to them. I wouldn't want Paul writing me a letter. Let's put it that way. What he's saying here is that the church in Corinth had a mixture of different people. The church in Corinth had a mixture of people who were rich and people who were poor. Now, the rich people would take the whole day off. They would Sabbath. And back then, communion wasn't just a little piece of gluten-free bread and a little shot of grape juice. No, communion was this giant feast. It was a thanksgiving for grace. It was a celebration, saying, we celebrate the grace that God gives us. We celebrate the sacrifice that Jesus gave on the cross and through his resurrection. We celebrate the freedom we have in him. And so they would do the biggest, craziest, most mouth-watering potluck you've ever seen. But here's the thing. All the rich people would take the day off. All the poor people couldn't afford that. They had to work all day. And so all the rich people would be feasting all day, having a party all day, celebrating the grace that Christ has given them. But by the time all the others showed up, there was no celebration to be had. All the food, all the drink was gone. And I don't know about you, but if I've eaten a whole turkey, I'm pretty tired. So they were probably all pretty tired by the time everybody else showed up. And so what Paul is saying here isn't, get your ducks in the row, don't sin. What he's saying is, no, no, no. Church in Corinth, communion is meant to be celebrated together as one body, as a whole group, a whole fellowship. It's not we can afford to do this, meanwhile, these people can't. It's this is a celebration for all of us. And so he's saying, guys, you're missing the point. You're missing the point. Grace, the grace of Christ is for everyone. And everybody should have the privilege, the ability to come to Christ with their sin, with their baggage, and go, I am not enough. But Christ's grace is. I don't have everything together, but Christ's grace does. I have all of this weight upon me, but Christ's grace is light. And so this morning, what baggage are you coming with today? What baggage do you have on your shoulders? What weight are you feeling this morning? If you're saying, I got no baggage, I'm good, you probably have the baggage of denial. Maybe it's the baggage of addiction. Maybe you have an addiction to pornography. Maybe you have an addiction to lust. Maybe you have an addiction to power. Maybe you have an addiction to alcohol. Maybe you have an addiction to religion. Is that your baggage? Maybe it's financial stress. Maybe that's your baggage you're bringing this morning. Maybe you're living paycheck to paycheck. And it's stressful. Is that your baggage this morning? Maybe it's family issues. Issues with your marriage. Issues with your spouse. Issues with your children. Issues with your extended family. Maybe it's conflict within your family. Forgiveness that needs to be given. Grudges that are staying. Is that your baggage this morning? Maybe it's religion. Maybe, as I said, you might have an addiction to religion. I have to go to church on Sunday. I have to make sure I don't swear. I have to make sure I pray every morning and read my Bible. I have to. I have to go to youth group for the youth. I have to go to Sunday school for the kids. I have to memorize this many verses, and then I'm good. But do you feel the weight of that all? Maybe religion is your baggage this morning. Maybe it's compromising biblical truth for non-believing family members. Maybe you're not standing up to what you know you should be standing up to. Maybe you're not saying what you should be saying. Maybe you're hiding the fact that Jesus is your Lord and he is everything in your life from your family members. Is that your baggage this morning? Maybe it's lying, straight and simple. The little lies, the big lies, the small lies, the in-between lies, the white lies. Maybe lying is your baggage this morning. Maybe it's struggles in your marriage, conflict, fighting, arguing. Is that your baggage this morning? Maybe it's identity, sexual or otherwise. Maybe you're struggling with that this morning and you feel the weight of that. Maybe it's straight up gossiping. Did you hear? Oh, so-and-so. Is that your baggage this morning? Maybe it's non-surrender. Maybe it's not surrendering to Christ the way that you are being called to surrender. Maybe it's not surrendering to the authority over you the way that you know it should be surrendered. Is that your baggage this morning? Maybe it's self-righteousness. Well, I'm perfect. Well, I'm great. I'm the best Christian at Sunnyside. I go to every Sunday service. Maybe that's your baggage this morning. How can you unload all of that baggage on Christ's yoke today? How can you come to him and say, Lord, I have all of this on my shoulders? Maybe for some of you, it's been weighing there for years, and you felt the weight of it. You've tried to ignore it, but you feel it every day you wake up, every night when you go on your bed. And Christ says, come to me, you who are weary, you who have all of that baggage, all of that sin on your shoulders. Come and follow me and take my yoke, which is light and easy, which is well-fitting. What baggage are you coming with today? Every one of you, as you entered the service this morning, should have gotten a baggage claim slip. And in the next few moments, as the band comes up and plays a song, and then Pastor Jesse will come and do what we usually do, a pastoral, a community prayer, and then the band will sing another song, I want you to think about your baggage this morning. And there should be pens in the seats in front of you, or you can use your own pen if you brought it. I want you to write down what your baggage is. You don't need to put down your name. But all of us should be writing something down. And if you're thinking, I've got no baggage, you can write down denial. But I want you to take that, and as the band sings, and as Jesse prays, and then we sing another song, I have a plate here on the table. And I would invite you to lay your baggage at the cross, to place it in the plate. And as you do so, you'll see that there's a little tab on the end of your baggage claim slip that you can rip off as a reminder that says, baggage claimed. That you no longer have to carry that weight because you've laid it at Christ's cross. And so as I pray and as the band comes up, I want us to think about what our baggage is this morning. Father, thank you. Thank you that you are one who claims our baggage. Thank you that you are one who says, my yoke is easy and light and is well-fitting. Lord, I pray for those here in this church with whatever they're carrying, whatever's on their minds, whatever they will write on these pieces of paper. And I ask, Lord, that truly, honestly, their baggage would be claimed by you this morning. Thank you for your grace. Thank you for your forgiveness. Thank you for the truth that you speak into our life. Amen.